Hi everyone, I'm Heidi Rogers, and this is Tell the Others. I wanted to create a place for meaningful conversation, life lessons, and parenting hacks. Sometimes I chat to interesting people, sometimes I answer questions about parenting or life stuff, and sometimes I just rant. These episodes are filled with stories and insights that made me say, ugh, I just have to tell the others. So let's dive in to hear what we can learn today. We got a good
night tonight, if I do say so myself. It is going to be good. I got my my crew. I got some buds joining us tonight. Anne, who you guys know, who's on most Mondays. And then Christy, my colleague at work, who we share a wall. We're in the same clinic. And she's also a fellow American. Christy, I messaged her today when I was looking at some of the questions that were coming through, a lot of school refusal questions. And so I thought I will get Christy on board to help throw her two cents in the mix, because Christy has spent a lot of time in her career working in schools as the psychologist in the school. So I'll let Christy intro herself, but she's been at a whole bunch of fancy schmancy schools in Melbourne. And she knows her stuff. So I think the reason why I wanted her to be here as well for school refusal is because, and Anne is here obviously for primary school, but I thought Christy would be helpful with the high school aspect, because it's kind of different. I think, you know, a five-year-old, a six-year-old, you can pick up and, you know, drop in the classroom, whereas a high schooler, you can't do that so much. So I just thought too, it might help from Christy's perspective. She's in private practice now, but when she was in the schools, she has an insight into what it's like for the schools and the teachers and kind of some of the plans that you can make. I think a lot of parents as well don't realize the rights that they have, or like how they can advocate for their kids, or the options that are there, things like an integration aid or having an additional staff member be in the room. There's stuff that is possible and doable, and you can get the school to help you. You don't need to be in this all alone. And I would say, see what Christy says, but I would say that in my experience of doing school refusal stuff with a lot of families over the years, the only way that it works, quote unquote works, is when the school is involved. And if that is teachers, the school counselor, the school psych, but like someone needs to be involved that's on the other side of the fence. As you hand your kid over, there needs to be someone else to help pick them up, because it's just really hard to do it all on your own. So before I kick off with this and get Christy and Anne to weigh in, I'll just read this question, but there actually were more questions that came through. This is one, but there's maybe three others that came through that were all about school refusal. And really the gist of it, like from my standpoint, is going to be the same in what I teach, I guess, of how you handle this and how you navigate school refusal. But Christy can speak to the adolescent stuff and Anne can speak to the primary school stuff. This also is a really near and dear topic for me, because I've had school refusal with both my kids. And it's really hard. I've bawled my eyes out to Anne and Christy, actually. I remember last year when my youngest was starting kinder, she was hysterical at drop-off. Like when I would hand her over, she ripped my shirt, and it's really hard. It was really freaking hard. And it's a disgusting feeling when you leave your kid in a state like that. And I found it really hard to like shake it for the rest of the day. I felt really sad for the rest of the day on those days. And eventually in time it got better. But I want to say, like, because I think when you're going through it, it feels like nobody gets how bad this is. Nobody gets how painful this is as a parent to experience. And I just want to say, I get it. I've had school refusal also with my older daughter. That was horrendous as well. So this is a special soft spot, I guess, in my heart, the school refusal kids, because, and parents, because I know how crap it is and isolating and alone, and just it sucks. Okay. So here's our question. All right. My 12-year-old experiences anxiety and has missed a lot of school in the past. She has just started high school at a new school. And after having a great first day last week and being excited about a fresh start, she didn't go today because her tummy was upset. She says she is sure that this upset tummy is different to her anxious upset tummy. I'm finding it difficult to stay calm and relaxed about this. Experience tells me she's not unwell. I'm in week two of the course and would greatly appreciate some advice on how to handle this. I want to stay calm and support her to get to school, but I don't have a confident approach. I'm feeling activated by a huge sense of disappointment, a sense of failure. I fear that the cycle is going to continue into high school. Can you give me some tips to get through the next few days? And just that little bit right there, I just want to interject. I want to stay calm and support her to get to school, but I don't have a confident approach. I think that is such a common thing that we feel when our child is refusing to do whatever, if it's school, swimming lessons, whatever it is, going to a friend's for sleepover, going away to school camp. That right there is such great language because it sums it up in a sentence. I want to stay calm and support her, but I just don't have a confident approach. I'm feeling activated by a sense of disappointment, a sense of failure, and a fear that the cycle is going to continue. Amen. I think that just so succinctly says that's what it feels like when you're going through it. So to the question, what have you tried? I told her that she knows her body best. And if she's unwell, she can stay home. Although it worries me that she is not actually unwell. It's such a shame for her to miss these first two crucial days of school, which are foundational in fostering a sense of belonging. Both her dad and I are doing our best to be neutral and supportive. In the past, we've withheld TV if she didn't go to school, and I would often get stressed and angry and sometimes withdraw from her, especially on days when I'm juggling work too. Side note, I love the honesty there. I think that's also brave and vulnerable to say that out loud. I think a lot of us don't want to admit when we withhold our love from our kids or when we withdraw from them when they do things that frustrate us, but we all do it. And I love that she has sort of disclosed that because I think that helps the rest of us feel less alone and helps the rest of us feel like less of horrible parents. And we know that everyone feels like this, you know, and that we want to pull away. And I definitely do that when my kids were having hard drop-offs. I'm like, I have a lot of patience. And then when I hit my patience limit at like, say the 15, 20 minute mark, then I'm angry. Then it's hard for me in those moments. Okay. So back to what mom wrote, I think she felt a keen sense of disappointment from us. I can see that this must have made a tough situation even tougher for her, a sense of shaming and disconnection. I want to do it differently this time, but how? She has a name for her anxiety and we talk about it. She is insistent that all is fine, although she added after that she just wants to read her book because she just doesn't want to be here. So is there anything else that's relevant, anything else happening at school in the past, not feeling safe or that she belongs. And when she was younger and perhaps still now, not wanting to leave me, fear of being sick at school and fear of COVID, all very legit. I hear a lot of kids tell me that they're afraid of throwing up at school and afraid of COVID, super, super normal. So I think I'll just say my little bits and then I'll hand over to Anne and Christy to chime in. My big bits are like the things that I think are the most important. I'm just going to share my screen so you guys can see this, but these are my kind of key things. I'm a calm, confident, loving leader. And that's the language I try to channel in my head. I did it today at drop off. My kids went back to school today and I was gearing up for a nightmare and it was actually okay. The thing that I say in my head is I'm calm, confident leader. I'm a confident leader. And I just try to channel that so I don't get frazzled and so I don't get angry, irritated. That's the language and the kind of energy that I try to channel. And saying things like, I know you can do it, instead of siding with the fear, because that's what avoidance is. And that avoidance is the amygdala doing its job. It's the amygdala saying, I don't want to be here right now. And what I prefer to say is instead of, yeah, I agree with your amygdala, we should go home. This school is scary, which is not what we're saying, obviously, but that's what the avoidance kind of communicates. I say, no, you can do it. I know you can do it. You can do it. And then this little step-by-step thing, I don't know if this helps you. This really helps. This helped me when I was learning about separation anxiety and learning kind of how it goes. It helped me to see that leaving quickly is actually better. And I thought staying around and, you know, letting them warm up and whatever was actually the more helpful thing. And you know your kid best. Some kids do do better with that, but it doesn't sound like this child that's going to actually be the case. And for a lot, I think for most kids, it's not, it doesn't help if you wait and let them warm up. I think it actually makes it worse. So from the amygdala's perspective, what's going on is when you stay and you're dragging out this drop off, I, amygdala, I'm now kind of like, okay, all right. So maybe they're going to stay. Maybe we're safe. Maybe we're good. But it keeps them in that heightened flight state, which is what the amygdala is best at, right? That's its job, is to keep us safe. And so it's sitting in this heightened state. And if you think about, you know, polyvagal bladder, Winnie the Pooh, Tigger, Eeyore, it's keeping it at Tigger, really stressed, right? And we don't want it to stay there. We want it to go up to safe, social, engaged, up to Winnie the Pooh, right? But when you're loitering, when you're lingering around and dragging out the goodbye, it keeps the child at Tigger. So in like, in some ways, we feel like we're being more loving, but it's actually not as loving as we think it is. What's the most loving is trying to get them back up to safe, social. And to do that, you got to walk away. So yeah, that's how the amygdala is thinking about it, is I'm going to stay in fight flight. Then third, once you leave and they have the big eruption, the big anger, the big tears, the whatever, what the brain is doing is it's actually going into a submissive kind of state where it goes, all right, it's futile. I surrender. I give up. Resisting is pointless. This is happening. I'm here. I have to do this. And then the brain will start to go up the ladder because it sort of realizes, oh crap, there's no way out. I got nothing. I got to just deal with it. And the longer you linger, the longer it takes them to get to that point. So then they start to adapt. So you're kind of giving them the gift of, hey, I'm going to help you adapt quickly today because I'm going to get out of here, is sort of what we're aiming for. And then where the amygdala then ends up is saying, I'm safe, I'm brave, I can do hard things, because it wasn't a 20-minute process. Do you know what I mean? One thing I just realized I forgot to say was at the top of the slide where it says, I'm a calm, confident leader, and andiamo, which is Italian for let's go, or now's the time, you know, let's go, let's move forward, onward sort of thing. That is the phrase that I have in my head, that I'm using when I'm in that kind of a drop-off situation or swimming lessons, or my daughter had, an MRI the other day and she's saying the whole morning, I'm not going, I'm not going. And I'm like, I know, literally as she's walking to the car, she's saying, I'm not going, I'm not going. Yep. I hear you. I hear you. And we just kept walking to the car and I just kept agreeing with her and going, yeah, I hear you. You don't want to have it. Mm-hmm. I hear you. But in my mind, I'm just going, andiamo, let's go. We're moving. We're moving. And that's the same thing you want to do with drop-offs or anything that they're resistant to, or that, you know, that anxiety is going, it's, and we're moving through it, and we're moving through it. Andiamo, andiamo, we're going, we're going. And the other thing I want to reframe is we're not looking for success. With drop-offs, we're not looking for success, especially with returning to school or separation anxiety. We're looking to get it done, because success, I think, I know I have the fantasy in my head of what I want my kids' drop-offs to look like, right? I want my kids' drop-offs to be like, bye, mom, you know, and like these happy moments like you see in the movies. But that's not the reality for a lot of us. And I think it's important to reframe, okay, wait, whoa, what is the expectation that I have? And who's the kid that I got? I might not have gotten a movie kid that waves bye like they do in the movies. I might have gotten a spicy kid. I might have gotten a stressed out kid. I might have gotten an anxious kid. Who's the kid I have? And so, sort of letting go of, what was I like as a kid? What were my siblings like? You know, no, what is the kid I have? The kid I have is spicy, anxious, hate school, love school, whatever. But the kid I have means that success, quote unquote, is going to look different for us. You know, it might be, we got in the building today. He got out of the car. Or I think the goal is like, we're looking for it to be done, not for it to be, quote unquote, successful, which is like, they're skipping in. You know, my daughter last year started with the, you know, ripping my shirt, screaming and hating it. And by the end of the year, she wasn't skipping and running in. She was doing it, and it was she could walk through the door unassisted. But to the last day, she was not happy about it. And she loved every lockdown that we had because she hates school. But success had to be reframed in my mind that for her, it's getting her in the door. So Christy, I'll just hand over to you first. Let me unmute you. Let's see. Can you hear me?
Yep. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Yeah. So what are your thoughts on this? What are your thoughts with the high school scene and the 12 and up kind of scene? What have you found is, I don't know. What are your thoughts on the school refusal thing?
Yeah, look, first of all, I just want to, you know, mention it's incredibly common. It's something we hear a lot about in schools. I would say at least half of my work. I've worked in 5 different schools in Melbourne and for 15 years as a school psychologist. And I would say a bulk of my work in schools was working with the young people when they found it difficult to get to school. So it's really common, and you're not alone, especially when you're starting a new school and especially grade 7. So the transition times that we know transition into that middle school is really tough. It's really tough age for young people. So I just wanted to normalize that experience. But when you're talking and sort of in line with what you were saying, Heidi, I think of the brain, and I think of sensitize and desensitize comes to my mind, especially with the woman that wrote in with the question, had mentioned that she'd experienced previously, maybe in primary school, something that made her not want to go to school. Is that right? There was something that perhaps.
Yeah, it was not feeling safe and that she didn't belong.
Yeah. So there's a history of potentially where the brain is worried that something bad could happen at school. We sort of become desensitized to the fact that school itself can become enough to be, if this is the right word, but a trigger, you know, something that will cause the brain to, and the amygdala to be frightened and to be scared. And so it's, the brain is overly sensitized to the exposure to school. And so the mere thought of school or talking about school can start physiological reactions in the body that can feel like sickness, like, and maybe it's different to anxiety before. I guess I want to say and validate too that the feelings are real. Her stomach probably does hurt, even if we all think or we agree or we wonder about it being a psychological cause or that it's anxiety. And I think that's important to validate, like her tummy probably does hurt. And that she's that I think with adolescents, we start to even hear a little bit more about, oh, they're faking it or they're trying to get out of going to school. I really move away from that because I think most of the young people I've worked with in schools legitimately felt sick. They felt unwell. So the physical symptoms are real, but maybe there's a brain or a amygdala source to some of that.
Yeah. Well, what I always say too is it's true because, so if we know that the amygdala produces more cortisol and adrenaline when it's in a fight flight response, where does it go if it's not able to be discharged into a fight or a flight response? Where does it go? It pools in the stomach. And so that feeling of nausea, that feeling of I'm going to vomit or just my tummy feels sick is correct because you have way too much cortisol and adrenaline that's just sitting there that's not actually being able to be activated. And so it's totally legit. And I totally think you're right that a lot of parents think they're being dramatic or they're faking it. And I think it's hard in this situation, especially because she has history of it, right? So mom knows you're fine, dude. Yes, your tummy probably does hurt, but it's not an illness. It's your anxiety. So what do you find when you were at schools? Is there like some sort of magic, you know, system that you have at schools where it's like, oh, we have a school refusal kit. Okay. So the first step is, you know, like we identify, is there anything we can actually change? Like it's a seating assignment, a locker, you know, like there's a practical thing, or you don't like starting the school with this subject or this or whatever, like there's something practical. But then I would imagine after you sort of nut out the practical stuff that can be changed, then you're still stuck with, you gotta go. So like, how can people maybe better utilize school resources, or what's like the system? What do you guys do when you have a school refusal kid?
I think the first step is letting the school know, especially if she's new at the school. I don't know the structure of the school that this young person's going to, but usually in middle school, I'm thinking 12 years old, grade seven, there's a year level coordinator, a head of house, a port of call. There's a tutor, a homeroom teacher. You have to let the school know so that they, because there will be systems of support. Typical state, and it's individual, but usually there's a meeting or a phone call with the parents to say what helps, what's helped in the past, an expedition to find out what is particularly anxiety provoking or has been anxiety provoking for the young person in the past. Some of the things that we would do, just practically speaking, and like you were talking about a second ago, kind of make drop off quick and clean. Would a teacher, or if you get used to a school, a trusted teacher or any safe supportive person, would meet the young person at the car and then take them in. So you're sort of transitioning from car to school with support. So the young person doesn't just have to get out and go on their own, for example. One of the things that schools are really useful, so as a school counselor, a head of house, or whoever your supportive staff member is, can sit down with the young person and actually write the plan together about what do you think would help you get to school? And in that, we'd actually print out their timetable and their subjects and sort of highlight, we call it the traffic light system. So red, yellow, and green. What are classes, the green classes that I know I can get to? And usually, to be honest, depending on the kid, there are things that are outside or like art or design, things that are a bit more fun, or that they know at least one other person in the class. And so we'd highlight the green classes and say, okay, so as a very beginning, we'd say, well, you just have to go to those classes. Because every minute you spend in school, you're desensitizing the brain to that school is unsafe. Every minute is one more minute of the brain getting other information that I'm going to be okay here. And like you were talking about expectations. So I would see if a kid came to school for 15 minutes and left, awesome, you made it, you did 15 minutes. Let's try what will help tomorrow to make it 20. And so it's a stepwise plan you can make with the school to have a very achievable and the young person feel success, like that shame that you're talking about can disappear because we've lowered the bar to an achievable level in the beginning. One class a day, two classes a day. And this really works. I've worked with young people who were school refusing. Gosh, they hadn't been to school for 3-4 months, who are now, because I'm still friends with my colleagues in the school, they're in VCE, they're finishing the school program. And they're there every day. So the graduated sort of tri-traded approach is really common for dealing with school refusal. What can you cope with? And then how can we slowly ramp it up a little bit with what you feel safe with? I'm just trying to think, sometimes having a buddy or a friend can work depending on the school and if the young person can signal out, oh, so-and-so makes me feel safe or a safe place. So often, and this is really common with young people who are afraid of being sick, working hand in hand with the parents, also with the health center or any staff like nurses or anyone in the health center, because often we can at least get the young person to go there first and even spend 10, 15, however, 20 minutes trying to practice the strategies that they might have to calm the body and the brain to then go back into the classroom. Or, am I really sick? How do I know? How can I tell? Can I give my body some time, my brain some time to figure out what is going on? So often health centers are also involved to try to, like I said, stretch out that time period spent.
What have you found when you were working with parents when you were in a school setting? What were the parents doing that was sucking and was not helpful? Okay. And then what stuff did you see that was helpful and you were like, oh, this kid's gonna get it because the parents are nailing it? And then the stuff that you were like, oh my God, these parents, like I saw it at drop off this morning, some of the parents that were loitering, I was like, oh my God, you're making it so much worse. Like, just get out of there. But like, what was that kind of stuff that you saw that was the cringy where you're going, this is where, what are the do's and don'ts kind of that you would have seen?
And I think that the tricky thing with teenagers comes with technology. And so when you say that, immediately my mind goes to when young people ring their parents from the bathroom And the parents then ring the school going, my child's distressed in the toilets. You know, I'm coming to get her, or I'm coming to get him. And that's what, you know, little kids don't do that because they don't have the tech. They probably would if they did. But I, if you get that call, or if your kids text you, or you get these, you know, missed 15 calls from your child, is to also remain calm and then to let the school know, but then let the school try to handle it as much as possible. Trust your school. Trust the school knows what they're doing, and they deal with this a lot. And like you said, we've got to regulate our scared mommy instincts to not rush to fix it, because I'm a mom and I've got three kids. I know this is really hard. I need, my son has gone through this as well. He's in grade two and he's a spicy kid. And so I need him to learn, as much as I want to rescue him and pick him up and make everything okay, I need him to learn that he can survive that feeling. And he comes out on the other side and says, that sucks and it hurts, but I lived through it. And if I rescue him, he doesn't ever learn how strong he is. So that's what I say to myself in my head when every bone in my body wants to go, just bring him home with me. So don't answer the call, or, you know, answer the phone, but don't necessarily go pick them up. Let the school know, and then let them help your child to stay at school.
I think that's a good reminder too, to say that the school deals with this all the time. Because I think when we're going through it as the parent, it's new to us. It feels like foreign. I don't know what to do. But leaning on the school, I think, is a really smart idea, because they do it all the time and they're much more proficient at it than we are as parents. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what else. That's the big one. I think, what did I see parents doing? I'm not sure. I don't know. Do you have any ideas? And then maybe I can think of something.
No, I think that would be, that's, what you said is right. I agree with that. And then maybe the other thing that I have seen is, and like the mom said in her thing of, I shame and I feel disappointed in her, and she can sense that, that would be super, super, super normal. But that would be the other thing that I have seen with a lot of parents. I've had a lot of moms calling me when their kids have been school refusing and saying, you know, how they yelled at them all morning, or they took their phone away, or just punishment, punitive things and shaming. And I think that's a big shift for parents, is to go, they're not choosing this, because who the hell would pick anxiety, you know, not realizing that the way that our kids act, they don't want to feel anxious either. They want to feel excited about school. And knowing, and I hear that in this mom's message and in her email, saying that she doesn't want to shame her and doesn't want to sort of punish her by, you know, taking away TV, but I think what, and withholding, but I think what we want to do, like for tomorrow, since this was just today, for tomorrow, I would be saying in the morning, we're going, and I will tell your teacher, I've emailed your teacher, that you're not feeling great and that she needs to let me know if something changes, but I know you can do it. Let's go. And just being confident and not being wobbly or dowdy, or how do you feel about if we, it's like when you're in a state, you know, it's like one of the analogies I like with anxiety in our kids is like when you're in labor or something. And, or if you're having a C-section, you don't want any of the doctors or nurses to sort of, and ah, and be like, not really sure about like, what are we doing? I don't really know. Like, you don't want them to have that kind of vibe about them, because especially when it's your first kid and you don't know what you're doing and you feel maybe anxious about the whole birth thing anyway, you want to be in the presence of people who are like, I've done this a million times, babe, you'll be fine. I got you. That's what you want, is to feel like you're in the presence of someone who knows what they're doing. And that's what I think. And this mom, I think, even said, I don't feel very confident. I think that's what we need to go into school drop off with, is, okay, so Heidi and Christy and Anne will chime in a second. You know, I have these professionals who've given me the tick of approval. Like, they've given me permission. I'm allowed to do a quick drop off and go, and I'm not damaging them for life. So I'm going to do that. and knowing that's where then I'm going to get my confidence is I can do this. This is not going to damage them for life. It is okay. I got this. We got this. We're going to school today. Let's go. And that sort of centered energy that you then kind of emit is what will help, I think, make a big difference. Does that resonate, Christy? Or is there anything you think I missed?
Yeah, completely. I think they feed off that energy, and that the only goal is to get to school, right? And that I don't expect anything else from you today, just to get through the day. Sometimes maybe it can help to let the pressure off of the academic side.
Yes, of course. Yeah. Who cares about academics? Yeah. Let that go. If you're battling school refusal, put down your sword, man. When it comes to academics, you just got to be getting through this, the getting to school bit and letting go of the academic stuff for sure. I agree. That's definitely one that I see parents get, makes it harder for themselves. Yeah. Thanks, KDY, for your 2 cents. I appreciate you.
Thank you for having me. Happy to help. Sure.
All right, Miss Anne, can you hit us with the littles and when you see this in primary schoolers and stuff? What are your thoughts on that with the littles? How do you help parents navigate that?
Hello, everybody. I'm not going to repeat. Basically, it's the same information that you and Christy have both shared. First and foremost, we have to realise that in those instances, the safety and security that the children are feeling is compromised. So it's ultimately about helping them restore a sense of safety. The drop-offs, I work, for those of you that don't know, I have an early childhood background, and so I've worked in early learning and primary schools, and seen and been witness to the separation anxiety that children can experience. And yes, I would agree that the quick drop off is much better. When children look to parents or adults or carers, remember that what I focus on is the modelling. So the lingering can sometimes look like, not for everyone, but what it can look like is, I'm scared. Why are you still hanging around this? And there must be something to be scared of. What are you protecting me from if you're staying for this amount of time? Even though the aim and the intention is to support. They do bounce back. They're okay. They do manage to settle back in. But again, it is that, for some children, it is that slow process. So similar to what Christy said, is often breaking it down into small steps. The goal is to get them there, but it doesn't mean that they might stay the full day. It might just be a really short time. It might be just meeting a few people. It might be walking in and finding strategies again. What makes them feel safe? And who is it that makes them feel safe? Now, with clients and children that I speak to, the main aim around what I feel that they often talk about is the fact that they don't necessarily feel understood within that. They don't know enough about me to be able to help me feel safe. So that's where that conversation with children, older children, primary age, can be beneficial in being able to determine what is it that makes them feel safe? What do they need people to know about them? And I feel that when they know that information, that can sometimes help that transition. And enlisting the school, that's the thing. I know that sometimes it can be hard, or you feel like, and I've had parents say to me, you know, I don't want to be that parent that says this or says that, or, you know, starts to look like I'm trying to tell them what to do. You are your child's advocate. Don't forget that. And so sharing this information with families, with schools, sorry, and with teaching staff who are there in a primary role to look after and care and educate your children, need to be made aware of what is happening for their child, you know, for your child or your children. And that's fair enough. So giving them information and an opportunity to get to know your children, particularly if they can't express themselves the way they want to themselves.
And when you have a kid who's super explosive at drop-off, we had a question come through in the Q&A chat pad of I need help for my spicy son's second day of school tomorrow. There was a lot of swearing, hitting kids, hitting me, punching me in the crotch. I'm assuming this is all a result of him not regulating himself, really struggling here. Yeah, I mean, that's the basic answer if he's not regulating himself. But what are your thoughts in that situation of the like completely exploding kid that's just, you know, I get an image in my mind of like a virtual tornado where they're just like, woo, you know.
Now, again, I have witnessed this where they're just like, I am not going in there. And there might be people watching and there's other, you know, there's other children or there's other parents and everyone's looking at you and it doesn't help the situation. And particularly as a parent being witness to that and trying to navigate one, your own child and helping them, and two, having everyone be there watching it as well. What I often do and what I've often seen works is just to be able to help rather than deal with it right there. I think that it's an opportunity to, where possible, to try and move the child away to somewhere a bit quieter, because they need both of, in order for him to be able to regulate and restore that sense of calm, he needs someone to help him. He can't do it on his own. And I think being in amongst a large group of people or where people are watching him wouldn't be helpful either. But it's also about having the conversation before. I think preparing children and talking about the fact that, you know, this is what's happening, what do we need to do, or what would be helpful. But I think often it's about giving the child that space, and the environment will be impacting on that as well. It's busy. There's lots of people. People are coming and going. You've got other children coming in. So where possible, trying to find a quieter space to be able to help him regulate. But remembering that he needs a calm adult to be able to help him regulate. He's not going to be able to do it on his own, particularly when he's completely, he's completely escalated and the behavior's heightened.
I think too, with spicy kids, I know that this is definitely true of my daughter, but who's spicy, but definitely spicy kids in general, is their ability to hit that dysregulation spot is so accessible and so easy in a moment like first day of school or at school drop off, right? In a situation that already is a lot of big feelings, I'm really charged up, I'm really kind of activated. Littlest things like rushing me, shooing me out the door, I'm not getting my shoes on fast enough, or I'm not, you know, buckling up quick enough or whatever, can take you from like a 2 to a 10. So I'm not saying like you just roll over while your kid's like punching you. I'm not saying that, but anything that you can do on the front end, on the preventative end with being organized, not rushing them. Spicy kids, especially, I outsource like everything else to other people. If I know that my spicy daughter and I have something important to do, my other daughter, she is with dad, she's with nanny, she's with someone else, so that I can really focus on my spicy kiddo. And maybe this week, or maybe if you know that drop-offs are hard for him, that's something to think about, is maybe, is it possible to get help from other people, other parents, family members, whatever, to help with the drop-off of the other kids, or to tell work you need to start at 10 o'clock this week so that you're not feeling the stress and pressure. I think it's just like putting as much stuff in place to make it as calm as possible in the morning, because spicy kids are so sensitive to that energetic tension that they can feel in the house. And I would be wondering, with this kiddo here who was doing a little tornado action at school this morning, what was happening at home before? You know, my gut says that there is probably some stress at home, just the usual, probably getting at the door stuff, but maybe something additional happened, you know, maybe there was something beyond that, that was, something bigger happened maybe this morning. Maybe he got yelled at or something. I don't know.
And often timing, I talk about time and just say, sometimes it might mean an extra few minutes. It might take 10 minutes, but I think it saves you the 15 or 20 minutes after. And I've mentioned this quote before by Pam Leo. You either spend the time meeting the need, or you end up, you know, spending the time dealing with the overwhelm. So I think the prevention, it doesn't mean that it's going to work 100% all of the time. And sometimes you do have things in place or a contingency plan and it still doesn't go the way you'd hoped. But what it still does is prepares yourself and it prepares your child, and gives them that time to make, to have a more measured approach. And because it might be, it's a little bit like a simmering pot of water. You know, as soon as you just turn up the heat a bit more, you could have overflow.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we need to be mindful of when, you know, Heidi, you're talking about spicy kids, is that there's a simmering that's happening.
Yeah.
And once, you know, you just tweak the little knob a little bit too much and then it's like all over.
Yeah. Yep. And there's no coming back then at that point.
No.
Then I'm just riding out this tantrum on the floor. Yep. Totally. Yep. And then with the, and Christy, I don't know if you have any thoughts on this one too. I know definitely teenagers do this. The dragging your feet, the can't get out the door, like they can do drop off, but actually getting out of the house and into the car. And that is the pain point of the day. And, you know, like, I can't get myself dressed. I can't get out of bed. That whole, and then now we're getting late and now I'm yelling, you know, with those situations or kiddos, have you guys found anything that you've deemed as helpful? I think for me, what I would say in those situations is I try to find something luring that's in the car. Like, you can pick the song that we listen to on the way there. Something, if I can try to, can we play with friends at the playground before, stop and get a coffee on the way, you know, if they're old enough, or hot chocolate or something, something that they do find appealing to get them sort of moving. The biggest thing I would say though is time, is cutting it not fine and close, but leaving a large space of time. So an extra 20 minutes to get out the door, you know, tell yourself we have to leave 20 minutes before then we actually do, so that you're not feeling stressed and pressured. That's kind of the things that come to my mind. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, you guys? A lot of the children that I talk about, often for children that experience anxiety, is often that feeling of being rushed.
Yeah.
So if you can set up little rituals, even if they're at home, set up little rituals that help put them in a put them in their flow, basically, is what I would term it as, you know. Yeah. Put them in a state of flow where they're, you know, they could be singing a song. They could be, you know, for younger children, I often say, you know, incorporate some play into that. If they're taking a bit too much time, it's just like, whoa, you know, it looks like you're stuck in quicksand. Let's see if we can get out, and do those sorts of things with younger children. But putting them into a state where they are naturally more relaxed, and it helps, again, that mind-body connection, because if their thought and their amygdala is set off, we need to bring them back and to help them reset. So what is, with time, what is it that we can do that will put them in that flow?
Christy, do you have any thoughts that you would add to that?
Yeah, I think with adolescents, sort of older, sort of the other end of the age spectrum, I guess, with children, is I always say, I think we take for granted that they know how to do certain things. I've got a 12-year-old and I'm like, oh, pack your bag and let's go. And then I realized that he doesn't know how to pack his bag. You know, I think as much scaffolding and help you can give your kid the night before you leave, get the shoes ready, the socks and the shoes, even steps that you think that they don't need, that they still do. Because, again, from a developmental perspective, if you do a bit of reading on what's happening in their brain in early middle school, is a lot. And so sometimes basic common sense stuff that they need help to get out the door a little bit easier, just it's just gone. And it's not because they don't want to do it. Sometimes it's just from a neuroscience perspective, the brain's just busier doing other things. So the prep, an ounce of prevention, what's the American saying, Heidi? The an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of regret. So I do a lot more for my son now that he's in year 7 than I ever did in grade 6, because he just needs that little bit of extra help to get him out the door, because he's starting something new. His brain's got a lot of information that it's kind of processing.
I think that's a really valuable thing that you just said. Yeah. I'm doing more for him in year 7 than I was in year 6, because his brain is doing a lot more stuff and he's doing something new being in high school now.
Exactly.
Wow.
I made his lunch, for example. I never made my kids lunch. I because I was busy and I just kind of made them do it themselves. And I realized he's learning a heck of a lot of new information right now. He's overwhelmed. And so any little thing I can do, I feel like, and I've had to catch myself, he should know how to do this. Why does he need my help with this? This is ridiculous. You know, I catch myself in my own thinking and I'm shooting, I call it, I'm shooting all over myself. And I'm like, well, wow, where am I getting that from? How can I make his life a little bit easier right now? Mm. It's not competition. We're in the same team.
Yeah. And I think expectation is a big one.
Yes. Yeah.
Expectation. Like just because we think they can do something or they did something last week or last year does not mean they can do it today. And that doesn't mean that there is anything wrong with them. It just means that we have to shift our expectation of, again, is it them or is it us, I think. So I think it is about saying, yeah, what are we expecting? What are we expecting of, you know, our little kiddos, our big kiddos? Where are they at right now? And I was reading something on the Man Cave, a post that they had talking about school. And when young children, and particularly year levels, last time they had what they termed normal, a normal year at school. And we've got to talk about the fact that for the last 2 years, the younger children, mostly that I deal with, like your kindergarten through to grade two, have had no normal experience of school over the past couple of years because of COVID. So a lot of them are still, when they're starting school, they're still navigating a new year on top of having missed so many social aspects and developmental milestones and ability to connect with people and socialize. So I think we need to be mindful of expectations.
Yeah. And I think you're right too. And what's the kid I have in front of me, right? Like if my kid, like Christy, you're saying, like I'm making his lunch and stuff, like, cause you can sense that he has a lot that he's holding and a lot that's going on. You know, the mental load is big for him right now. Knowing that I know he's capable cause he's done it before. He's just in a stressful period right now. You know, it's like if my husband said to me, you know, why can't you make your lunch right now while you're in the middle of, you know, working on a presentation or something like that, he would help me out and he would make my lunch because he would be like, I know she knows how to make it, but I'm just helping her out because she's slammed right now. She's stressed, right? I think we forget that sometimes with our kids, that things like, yeah, getting your shoes on or packing your backpack or remembering your hat or whatever the things are that they have on their little job list, that it's really hard to remember all those things, especially when you don't have a fully developed brain. Like your cortex sucks. Like you don't even have the ability to regulate and like logic, rational thought, forward planning. Like you don't even have that setting yet in your head. And so, yeah, remembering all the things is really hard when you're a kid. And as you just said, Anne, I think you're right that not only that, but then also I'm navigating what it really means to be back at school because I've not really been back at school for 2 years. So it's exactly. Sort of like starting prep all over again, you know? Yeah.
And think of the little ones like your grade, you know, like your grade ones or twos, they pretty much have had no experience of what normal school or typical school day looks like because they were there and then they weren't there. And then, you know, and they've been in a little cocoon of being at home. Where it's safe and I know, and this is what it looks like. And now I'm going out into this big wide world. And like Christy said, you know, mentioning the things that what we see as an adult, like this is all the things that need to be done in order to get to school, putting shoes on, get your bag, pack your bag, do whatever else. But they're doing what they know and what they feel is important to them at that moment. So it is about lending that hand and walking, rather than walking behind them or in front of them, is walking alongside them.
And I think you guys have sat here many a time while I've read you Glennon Doyle, but I'm going to read from the queen herself again. And this, I think, Mama, who sent through this question about her 12-year-old, if you don't know Glennon, you need to get on the Glennon train because she's amazing. These are a couple of quotes from Untamed and I think one of her other books that I love and I think are great for all of us to remember when our kids are struggling and suffering with whatever, to remember this, okay? So when her pain is fresh and new, let her have it. Don't try to take it away. Forgive yourself for not having that power. Grief and pain are like joy and peace. They are not things we should try to snatch from each other. They're sacred. They are part of each person's journey. All we can do is offer relief from this fear that I am all alone. That is the one fear you can alleviate. And then in another part of the book, she talks about her daughter, Tish, and how she had this sort of sense in her head of what she was supposed to do as Tish's mom and what that meant. And I have this conversation with parents a lot that I think we think the brief is I'm supposed to protect my kid. And yeah, that's a part of it. But I think it gets blurry and it gets confusing when our kids are anxious about something or really upset about something. We think then, oh, maybe I shouldn't do it and I should let them avoid it or whatever. But I love her analogy of being fireproof. So she says, that was back when I thought my job was to keep Tish safe instead of allowing her to become brave. Back when I believed mother was supposed to be her daughter's hero instead of allowing her daughter to become her own hero. That is the one thing I need my children to know about themselves. Nothing will destroy them. So I do not want to protect them from life's fires. I want to point them towards the fire and say, I see your fear and it's big. I also see your courage and it's bigger. We can do hard things, baby. We are fireproof. And that analogy of the fire, I think of that all the time. Whenever my kids are facing anything challenging, I see it in the path up ahead. I see that fire. Every instinct within me says, protect, stand in front of her, put out the flames myself, take a different path, you know? And what I do now is I stand her in front of me, I stand behind her or I stand alongside her and I'm whispering in her ear, you got this, you're fireproof. We can do hard things in our family. That's what we do. How do I know that you're going to get through this? How do I know that you're fireproof? Because you're my kid, and I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to be with you every step of the way. So as we walk through this fire, we will get a little burned. We will get a little singed. But you won't be in it alone. I'll be right next to you every step of the way. And that's the piece. And if you think about trauma, which is what Christy, Ann, and I spend a lot of our time in the clinic talking about with clients, is trauma and stuff that they've experienced. The thing with trauma is it makes you kind of, makes you doubt a part of yourself, because when you went through your trauma, you were all alone. And then when you were trying to process your trauma, you were all alone. And a lot of people will say to all of us, Christy, Ann, and I've talked about this many times, the pain wasn't in the thing that happened to me. The worst part was that I did it alone. The worst part was that I felt like I had no one to talk to about the thing that happened. A lot of times I'll say to clients when they disclose something horrible that happened, I'll say, my God, who did you talk to about that? And they'll be like, nobody. You didn't talk to your mom or your dad or your teacher, or your coach, or your uncle, or your grandma, or your brother, or your sister, any, nope. Where has this been? This horrible thing that happened, this pain, this suffering, this trauma, where has this been? It's just been sitting inside me my whole life. And then, you know, we're all as clinicians devastated that this beautiful person has been carrying this pain their whole life, you know, and it doesn't need to be like that. And that I think is what we forget a lot as parents, is that's the gig, dude. That's the job. I stand alongside you. I stand with you. You're not alone. So whatever happens, I know you're going to be okay, because you didn't go through it alone. You had me with you. And if you think about too, as clinicians, like, what do we do really, Christy, Ann, and I at work? Like, we're not fixing things. We're not bringing people back from the dead. We're not making you get your job back or your boyfriend takes you back. Like, we're not doing magical stuff like that. What we're doing is we're bearing witness to people's pain and suffering. And we're reaching our hand, you know, across the table and saying, I'm with you. You're not in this alone. I'm here. That was hard. God, thank you for sharing that with me. You're not alone in this. I hear you. That's what our job is bearing witness and being present for people in their pain. That is your job as a parent, is to be present to your child's experience, try to put your crap to the side, to be present to their experience and be with them. That's it. That's the gig, man.
Yeah,
being with them. Yeah. Being with. It's not fixing it. It's not making the bad stuff go away, shielding them, protecting them from everything. Bad shit is going to happen, because that is life. The thing that I can guarantee my kids, though, I will be with you. You will not go through it alone. And that, I think, with school, with the next question I'm about to get to, that's it, man, is you're not in this alone. And that's how I know too, when my kids go to therapy one day in the future, because let's be honest, all of our kids are going to go to therapy. When my kids go to therapy in the future and they tell my their therapist, you know, and at school drop-off, I was bawling my eyes out and I didn't want to go and my mom made me go. The therapist will then say, because I've said this to clients, and what did your mom say after? What did your mom do later? Oh, she held me as I cried. She talked about how hard it was. She validated my experience. She told me I wasn't crazy. She validated that it was hard. And she said, I know, sweetheart, and I'm with you. And that is like, rad. That's good parenting, is going, yeah, it's hard. I'm with you. We got this. We'll get through it, you know?
If you're a parent or a professional who works with children and you want my help in improving things with the kiddos in your life, or if you're simply a human being feeling kind of stuck and maybe kind of overwhelmed, my online programs have lots of resources, transformative content, one-on-one coaching, group coaching, and a supportive community. If you want to learn more, just go to HeidiRogers.com. All right, friends, thank you as always for tuning in today. Our time is our most precious asset, so I truly appreciate you sharing your time with me. I'll see you right back here for the next episode of Tell the Others.